Welcome back, dear listeners, to the Dish with Dina podcast. Thank you for joining us again. Today, my guest is Regan Nelson, who is one of the many internet strangers turned friends I met on social media, and I'm so pleased she accepted my request to interview her, especially as we celebrate Earth Day this month. Regan and I dish about our exposure to toxic chemicals, especially those found in cosmetics and textiles, and how to make small but sustainable changes to not only maximize our overall health, but to protect our planet as well. So sit back, enjoy the conversation, and let's dish. Welcome, Regan Nelson, to the Dish with Dina podcast. Thank you so much for spending time with me today.
I'm excited to be here. Thanks for having me, Dina.
I'm excited too, because you are one of the first new contacts that I have made on the social media platform called Threads. A lot of us have started finding ourselves on there. Either we got away from something else or found ourselves on there. And I took a chance and just posted, I'm looking for people to be on my podcast. I think I walked away for, you know, an hour or fell asleep or something. And next thing I knew, there were about half a dozen people who responded. And I felt so overwhelmed and so grateful that strangers on the internet can find like-mindedness or just find each other. So I'm really grateful for your time and energy, and I can't wait to see what unfolds in this discussion that we're going to have. So share with us a little bit about who you are, your mission. I obviously know a little bit more about you than our listeners do right now, but tell us a little bit about your current situation, how you got there, and your area of expertise.
Yeah, of course. Well, I think first and foremost, I am also a podcaster like you. My newest show is called Clean and Green Living, where I help people reduce their exposure to toxic chemicals through easy and affordable lifestyle changes. And my goal with the show really is to empower people with knowledge and information in a really digestible, accessible way that helps them to live a safer, healthier, and more sustainable life. And I come to that with an academic background in exercise physiology. So I have a master's degree and an undergraduate degree in exercise physiology. It's been a few years since I've been studying exercise physiology, but the last 20 plus years, I've worked either in or very closely related to the health and wellness industry in a variety of ways. At first, my work first started postgraduate school at Nike, actually working in the sports research lab as a research physiologist. So using that degree. And then I ended up going into innovation, where I worked more in a business, you know, a business function within Nike. And then about 13 years ago, I started my own company, which was a huge leap, walking away from the bright, shiny, flashy lights that is the world of Nike. And I started my own consulting business. And since then, I have been working in consumer insights and innovation, helping large companies like Nike, they are still a client, and small startups to really understand their consumer. And I've worked in the health and wellness space for supplement companies, for apparel companies. I've worked for a pharmaceutical company before, which, you know, was a little slight stray from my mission, but interesting. I'm a curious, constant learner, so I learned a lot from that. And the podcast really is just an extension of my personal passion to help people live safer, healthier lives. And the primary way that I'm fueling that passion besides the podcast right now is through my business with Beauty Counter, which is a network marketing company that makes and sells safer products. And the reason why I joined was because Beauty Counter is advocating for more health protective legislation so that all products are safer. And so, yeah, that's a long story, like 20 years into a few minutes, but that is me.
There is a lot of language, there is a lot of effort, there is a lot of advocacy that feels very similar to me in the food and nutrition profession. And as we can, you know, also assume across social media, there's a lot of misinformation, disinformation. So one of the things I wanted to find out first, because in the world of food and nutrition, we do hear this word clean a lot, and it doesn't feel like it's a very universally defined term. And sometimes it's used in ways that maybe become fearful for people of what am I doing, right? So how much is too much of really anything? In your case of the actual products that people are consuming, or maybe even food items as well, is there a defined term as to how you define the word clean?
You know, I struggle with that. I struggled with naming my podcast even, because I think clean and green are words that are often associated with greenwashing, you know, where companies are targeting you with a few key phrases to make you think it's healthier, you know, like gluten-free, right? I'm sure you talk about that. Just because something's gluten-free doesn't mean it's good for you. Just because something is clean doesn't actually mean that those ingredients are safer for you. And that's because there is very little regulation that governs the personal care industry. So until 2022, when we passed MOCRA, which is the Modernization of Cosmetic Regulation Act, we had not passed a federal piece of legislation over the personal care industry. I will use beauty and personal care interchangeably, but I want people to know this is not just for women. This is an issue that affects every single human being. That last law was passed in 1938. That was the same year that the Golden Gate Bridge was built. And the rules that governed the personal care industry in 1938 are 1.5 pages long. This is, I believe, an $80 billion industry. And 1.5 pages is telling these companies what they can and cannot do. So the term clean is a tricky one. I use it because I think at the end of the day, people are starting to understand what it means. It may be something slightly different. You know, it's sort of like clean eating for one person might be vegan, and clean eating for another person might be paleo. I think those two things have more things in common than they do different. So for personal care products, I think I try to use safer, but it's a very ambiguous term. And that's one of the challenges with the industry. And one of the things we're trying to do at Beauty Counter, working with other brands, we have what's called the Know Better, Do Better Collaborative. And that's actually partnered with other brands and other organizations working in this space to help create more guidelines and naming restrictions, so that when you see a product and it says, you know, it's put in the clean beauty category, what does that actually mean?
I appreciate this walkthrough because it's true. Sometimes I think it's maybe been co-opted by some other companies or whatever the mission might be out there, where it just becomes like the catchphrase. And in the world of dietetics and nutrition and food, similar situations, right? I always tend to say the front of packaging could potentially be fiction, but the back is fact. So turn things over and read things and get educated on things. And don't be too worried so much about the length of the words or how many words are on there, because chemicals are in and make up everything. But it's really, like you mentioned, the safer usage of things, the toxicity of things. And so in our world, we've had a lot of conversations recently about ultra processed foods versus minimally processed foods. Like, how far away are we straying from the wholeness of something? And how are we defining processing, right? Like corn on the cob, as soon as you strip away the cob and you take off the kernels, you've processed the corn. But when you've pulverize that down into a corn chip, then that becomes more of an ultra processed food, and there's a lot more additives built into it. Same thing with generally recognized as safe. I mean, much like you were saying with the 2022 turnaround of legislature, we've had trans fats flying around in food for many, many years, considered to be generally recognized as safe, which are like parts per billion that they deem not to be an issue. And then I think it was around 2015 or 16 where guess what? Those are carcinogenic. They are now causing cancer. And so the U.S. government had then put out, an ordinance where all of the food manufacturers now have to make sure they're not including trans fats in their food products. But I guess what really comes down to is, why does it happen in the first place? Why does it take so long? Who are the people that suffer for it? And does it become a thing where if you're not listening to the constituents, you know, asking the representatives to please speak on our behalf and please create an agenda that is supporting our health, then who are the people that end up suffering because of it, and how many more people can suffer? I'm sure you might be a little bit more well-versed about this than I do, but it's okay if you don't have like the answers to save the world, right?
Yeah, no, I mean, I just had a guest on my show. It will be airing next week. So it'll have aired by the time this goes live. Dr. Leo Trasande, who's a pediatrician at NYU. This is the second time I've had him on my podcast. He wrote a book called Sicker, Fatter, Poorer. He worked in the with Hillary Clinton on health policy back in the day. Very smart, very passionate man when it comes to this issue. And he said to me, which I'd never heard him say before, and we've talked many times, this is something that 1% of the population knows about, but it impacts 99% of people. So as I said, this is not just a female issue. Every single one of us puts products on our body every single day. Lotion, deodorant, chapstick. It could be makeup if you're a woman. It could be, you know, anything. It also goes into our cleaning products. And right now, the way that the laws are written, there is no pre-market testing of ingredients. So the US currently restricts about 30 products from personal care, 30 ingredients from personal care products. I'm trying to think of like off the top of my head what some of those are, but you know, they're hard to say, just like food ingredients. And they're things that you may not even know exist. In the European Union, they restrict over 1,600 ingredients from their personal care products. So since World War II, something like 80,000 chemicals have been introduced into commerce. Less than 10% have been tested for human health and safety. So there's all of these ingredients that companies are used, and for good purpose. Stabilizers, preservatives, maybe they're thickeners. Some of them are used for anti-aging benefits. You know, they have a purpose, but we don't know how they impact, say, you know, our health, because there is no requirement by the FDA for any of these ingredients to be tested. So it's a little different in food also, in that in food, you have to put the ingredients of your product on the label. There is something called the fragrance loophole. And in cosmetics, anytime you see the word fragrance, this also applies to cleaning products, laundry products. I mean, really anytime, candles, anytime you see the word just fragrance or eau de parfum, that's not just one ingredient. Fragrance is considered a trade secret. So companies do not have to tell you what they're putting inside of that fragrance. It could be 50 things. It could be 500 things. And in there lies a lot of chemicals of concern. The number one is phthalates. Phthalates are a plasticizer. They're also used like vinyl shower curtains. They're used in pesticides to help pesticides absorb into the ground. Phthalates are so pervasive in our world, but you as a consumer could pick up a lotion and you might know you need to avoid phthalates, but you don't even know that phthalates are in that product because they don't have to tell you. And that's one of the biggest issues, I think, is transparency. And that's something that we're really working towards. And MOCRA did address it to an extent. Like, we raised the floor a bit. Now companies will have to disclose a specific list of allergens, anything that's considered an allergen, but that doesn't mean they would have to disclose something that's like a carcinogen. For example, formaldehyde is an ingredient that you can put into lotions. Formaldehyde releasers are found in a lot of high-end skincare products. I'm not just talking about the cheap stuff you buy at Walgreens. I'm talking about the Chanel, the like every single tier of price, you will find these ingredients. So you may think your Chanel lipstick is safe, but it's not necessarily formulated with safe ingredients, or is it even tested like food? Glyphosate, for example, you know, glyphosate is not something that's added to food. It's a byproduct of the farming process, right? But we know there's glyphosate in our foods. We're even finding PFAS chemicals in our foods. Heavy metals are a contaminant of cosmetic manufacturing, particularly colored cosmetics, lipstick, blush, eyeshadows, things like that. So most companies don't test their final products for heavy metals. They only test their raw ingredients, or they're relying on suppliers to say that they're testing their raw ingredients. And so not only do you have to worry about what's in it from a formulation standpoint, but you also have to worry about what's in it from a contaminant standpoint. And, you know, that's a lot of responsibility on consumers, which really isn't fair at the end of the day.
I 100% agree, because you mentioned, you know, kind of also in your podcast as well, you say that what your mission is to provide information, education, but also in an easy and affordable way. And so just like you said, a lot of times, at least in the dietetics, the nutrition, food nutrition world, people think the more organic a food is, the more costly it's going to be. And sometimes it is, and sometimes it isn't. But you often do think, oh, if it must be out of my reach, it must be better for me. But that's, as you just mentioned, that's not always the case. And so therein lies the rub. Then it becomes the consumer's responsibility to figure out all of these scientific terms and go through legislature and ordinance and all these things. Like, that's ridiculous, versus making it part of the process to begin with. And like, as you mentioned, right, transparency. And I get proprietary discussions, I understand that. But like you said, at least within maybe a category of something that they have to disclaim it. And so how much work has to be done before people do, or I should say the manufacturers of these products, start realizing that they have to make some changes? And it could affect the quality, obviously, or how much it costs for them to manufacture these particular items.
Yeah, I mean, look at organic food. I think you just brought up the point. Organic food doesn't have to be more expensive. It is widely accessible at big box stores. You can get it at Walmart, Target. And the price, while still in some cases slightly more than conventional food, I think that gap between conventional and organic has declined over the last 20 years for sure. I mean, I remember just being at Whole Foods, and that was a whole paycheck, as we call it. And, you know, I was shopping in Trader Joe's or at our Fred Meyer, which is Kroger. And so cosmetics, I'm hoping, are going to move in the same direction as food as more people are demanding safer products. There are great companies that are big, the L'Oreals of the world, that are looking into this. They are concerned with formulating safer products. They are thinking about their carbon footprint. And as volume increases, because you have big manufacturers with big contracts and they know they're putting out a lot of stuff, that's going to help drive the price down and make more products accessible. That doesn't mean that every large company has that perspective, but there are so many great brands for personal care products that are safer. Credo Beauty is a fantastic resource for safer products. They have very similar standards to Beauty Counter, which when it comes to, we call it the never list at Beauty Counter, which now is over 2,500 ingredients we won't formulate with. Credo is, I think, about the same number. They call it the Credo Clean Standard. They were actually created by the same woman, a woman named Mia Davis, who is a passionate and educated leader in this space. This was, you know, kind of the stepping stones of her career to create those two standards. So I always recommend those are the two places to start, not just because they're committed to formulation, but really because they're committed to that transparency and the testing. You can get small, clean, I'm using air quotes for anyone listening, brands, but that they're often relying on their suppliers. And so you could still get contaminants because they're not testing their end product. So if you're trying to be really, really careful, let's say you struggled with infertility, or you have cancer, or, you know, a neurodegenerative disease, and your threshold you believe is quite low, and you want to reduce as toxic exposure as much as you can, then go to those high brands, you know, that you know are really committed to the process every step of the way. I also don't preach perfection. So when I talk to young girls, I talk a lot to young girls because I have a 12-year-old daughter. This is a pivotal time for girls to be paying attention to this issue. They're going through fertility or, you know, puberty. They're not thinking about their fertility, but they should be, because the decisions they make today are impacting their ability to get pregnant in 10, 20 years, whatever it might be. And I tell them, you know, much, and I love that, you know, you're in the food space. I tell them, let's think about this like food, 80-20. 80% of the food we eat is nourishing for our body. It fuels our energy demands and needs. You know, I have a background in physiology. I studied some nutrition as well. So I very blatantly, it's like we have to fuel our body with good things 80% of the time. 20% of the time, it's okay to, you know, have the donut, the salt and vinegar chips. Those are my daughter's favorite. Same thing when it comes to personal care and cosmetics. 80% of the time, I recommend that you be choosing the safest products that you can afford. And then if you really get sucked in to that fun eyeshadow palette at Target and your girlfriends want it, like that's okay too.
I absolutely love this approach because I do feel like people get very confused. The general consumer is out there listening to maybe a lot of the misinformation or feeling like it's an all or nothing approach. And then you also have this need for immediate gratification. People don't necessarily want to take the time or they want to see immediate results in something. And so I absolutely love that I'm the same way. As you might have seen me nodding like fervently as you were speaking, because that whole 80-20 rule, that's so, you know, it's not about quote unquote balance of things. It's about the harmony of things, of how we could prioritize certain things, but it doesn't have to be 100% to 0% and living a life, because who can keep that up? I mean, even if we try to, it's going to take away a lot of our joy and pleasure, because all we're ever going to be doing is being, you know, spending so much time on whatever, reading through product lists or trying to get worried about, I don't even have a social life. There's no quality in my life, with the understanding, of course, that certain people might be more immunocompromised than others. And obviously we make accommodations to be able to support them. And that was actually my next question, Reagan, is when it comes to the potential list of symptoms that could be related to product use, of what is going on. So like in the case of the food world, right? If I see somebody who is eating a lot of takeout, and granted, you know, again, with the discussion of what can they or can they not afford, but we can always try to find things within people's budgets that aren't as heavily laden with extra salt and fat and sugar. But I can see some people suffering the consequences of high blood pressure, high cholesterol issues, even skin things, gut things. So I'm thinking along the lines of like hormone issues, as you just mentioned, cancer issues. Is there anything else that people could potentially think it could be the products that I'm using? This could be something that I'm looking out for if they notice, whether it's internal or external ways of something showing up on them.
I mean, there are so many things. Our skin is our largest organ. So I always tell people, whatever you're putting on your body, you should be willing to put in your mouth, because it's going to the same place. Ultimately, when it comes to your health, it is going to the same place. So, you know, you see these pictures or videos of little girls who've gotten into their mom's makeup drawer and they're eating the cosmetics. You probably want to make sure that your eyeshadow doesn't have heavy metals and doesn't have talc, which is often contaminated with asbestos. So, I mean, it is a significant issue. The areas where we're seeing the biggest impact are certainly hormones, endocrine. These are known endocrine disrupting chemicals. Phthalates, as I mentioned earlier, are an endocrine disrupting chemical. Bisphenols. Bisphenol, BPA, was actually created, and hopefully I get this right. I learned this from Dr. Laura Shaheen, who was one of my podcast guests. She's a fertility specialist in Seattle, Washington. And she's on the Science Advisory Council with Beauty Counter. So we have great scientists who share the information that they're learning. And bisphenol was created, I believe, in the 30s, BPA in the 30s, as a synthetic estrogen to help women maintain pregnancy. They then found another chemical, and I don't remember what that one was called, so I'm not even going to try to quote it, that was more effective in helping women maintain pregnancy. They then found most of the women who received this hormone, synthetic hormone, during their pregnancy had offspring with an incredibly high incidence of cervical cancer for female, and I believe it was also like testicular or prostate cancer for their male offspring. So they stopped giving this to women. I bring that story up because here is one chemical that was replaced with another one that caused known cancer. And we know that BPA was acting the same way as this other chemical. So it's another huge concern. I mean, you may have heard about BPA in baby bottles. That was a ban that took place a number of years ago, I believe in the late 90s, 2000s. You are now hearing about BPA in sports bras. You know, a lot of the same things that you find in plastic packaging, you're also finding in apparel. You know, this is the world that I came from, worked on apparel innovation at Nike, and polyester is essentially plastic. It's a petroleum-based product, so ideally not great for the world. And we're finding that there are some issues with these plastics in our skin. What you were talking about earlier, like not perfection, not obsessing over it. I just did a video about this the other day. It's because someone asked me, like, how much should I be concerned about the BPA in my sports bras or in my workout clothes or the PFAS in my outerwear? Because they use PFAS chemicals for waterproofing. You'll also find PFAS chemicals in a lot of period underwear. When it comes to the bisphenols in our sports bras and our leggings, I am not as concerned about that right now. I think there are other areas of our lives where we should be focusing more on our bisphenol exposure. Canned food, plastic, just plastic water bottles. It could be your plastic food containers, those sorts of things. I think those are bigger concern to me because we're either ingesting them or they're leaching chemicals through heating process into our food. So I try to kind of create a hierarchy of concern. PFAS chemicals, those are actually forever chemicals. So the bisphenols, the phthalates, parabens, those are what we call transient chemicals. So when you test someone's blood or urine, you actually find that those will leave our system pretty quickly. So that's out of all this conversation, here's some good news. Like, we can detox. You know, that's why it's so important to exercise, sweat, drink a lot of water, make sure you're pooping regularly, like use all your detox pathways, because all these chemicals that I'm talking about are transient. They will leave our system very quickly. That doesn't mean they can't have an impact when they are in our system, but we can get rid of them. Forever chemicals like PFAS, unfortunately, they don't leave our system. So like with the period underwear, for example, I am more concerned about that one because chemicals tend to be activated by heat and warmth. If you think about where you're putting period underwear, that's one that I would definitely stray away from. Thinx actually had a class action lawsuit against them because of that. There's a brand called Aisle, A-I-S-L-E. They don't have PFAS in their period underwear. But when it comes to the outerwear and the PFAS, you know, for a rain protective coating, I'm more concerned about that for the environment and making its way into our water, which we then are drinking, than I am about it from dermal absorption, because typically you wear some other base layer underneath your raincoat and the inside of the fabric is not waterproof. It's just the outside. So I try to look at it from a practical standpoint with people. These chemicals are having a really big impact on our health, but you can do small things that will like incrementally reduce your exposure, and it will reduce your risk of the autoimmune disease, the endocrine disrupting diseases, the cancers, all of those things.
We could have a whole discussion just about consumerism for sure. Yeah. And I was thinking of that too, and I was listening to some of your podcasts and watching some of your content online as well. Just like, how much is too much of anything? Like, you know, if you are committed to skiing or tennis or swimming or whatever, you know, how many things do you need? Well, sometimes that's just part of literally the name of the game is like, you need to get the proper equipment to be able to execute whatever it is and that stuff. But when it comes to other things that might not have to, you might have to invest in so much stuff, and really taking more of a minimalist standpoint to things. And then, as you mentioned as well, the sustainability, not just in human form, but also Mother Earth too. Like, let's make sure we're keeping accountable for any kind of damage we're doing to our spaces and nature and things that are going to last longer than that. I often say, I don't have children, but I really care about other people's generations to come because we all play a role in this. So the small things that you can do, I absolutely love that approach because it does feel realistic. It feels like it's not super overwhelming or like, well, what's the point if I'm not going to make a difference? But you could make a difference, dear listener, if you're hearing something like this and taking those small steps that Reagan just talked about. So Reagan, this whole conversation could in itself be considered a hot topic for sure, but is there anything even within this discussion that does, you know, grind your gears or even get you excited about to have these discussions? And feel free to tie in what potentially you'll be working on in a couple of months as well.
Yeah. Gosh, you know, I think what bothers me the most, and I try to not let it bother me, is that there are so many people of privilege who have the ability to make safer choices, and they're ignoring this. This issue disproportionately impacts women. It disproportionately impacts women of color and poor people, just much like climate change or other issues do. So for example, women of color, Black women use hair straighteners. That's a cultural piece. Those hair straighteners are laden with formaldehyde and are known carcinogens. Many of the women working in salons and nail salons are women of color, and they're being not only impacted by what they put on their body, but what they breathe in their workplace every single day. In California, there's what was called the Safer Salon Bill, which actually Beauty Counter helped to pass. We were instrumental in advocating for this piece of legislation that requires the salons to disclose the ingredients that are in the hair care products. So like, you know, think the giant jugs that are being used in a big hair salon, simply so that women can know at least what they're being exposed to. We can't necessarily ban these products, but we can make labeling and transparency front and center. So that, I think, is one of the things, because I am a woman of privilege myself, and I live in this community where I see people making choices that they don't have to be making. They can afford. They're already buying expensive products. You know, again, I'm like the Chanel or the Bobbi Brown or whatever it is. And I'm not trying to, I try not to like target one specific label, conventional things. They can very much afford to buy a Beauty Counter product or a Tata Harper or Juice Beauty or Ilia or any number of them. And they have young girls. And I just like, I want to bang my head against the wall because I saw something, well, there was a news article that said, and it was in multiple news sources, probably in the last 2 months, we don't know why girls are going through early puberty. And they had some medical studies that I'm like, what? Of course we know why girls are going through early puberty. It's because their mothers and their mothers' mothers have all been exposed to pesticides, phthalates, all of these endocrine disrupting chemicals. And if you think about it, your eggs, like my daughter's eggs, were created in me, right? So my granddaughter was impacted by what I was eating. This is a known scientific fact. They're showing this in, you know, the study of epigenetics. So when there's, you know, I try to take the 80-20 rule, but also like, we are watching our friends struggle with cancer. I've had two friends. Well, I had a friend pass away in December of cancer. I have a friend with brain cancer. I had a friend die of 35 of bladder cancer. My grandparents both died of cancer. My uncle died of cancer. And a huge percentage of cancer is unaccounted for. It is environmental. And it just feels like if you have the means to do better, there are a lot of people who wish they could afford to buy safer products, but it's just not in their budget, you know, or it's, again, culturally, it's not accepted, whatever it might be. But if we have the ability to do it, like, why wouldn't you? I just, as you can tell, it gets me a little fired up.
I was going to say, I love the passion. And this also leads me to the discussion more about you living and leading by example through what you are consuming and what you are educating people on, but also, are you taking care of yourself? Because this is very heated discussions that come up, a lot of things that can, you know, be asked a lot of you. So would you mind sharing with us how you balance it all? What is a current week in the life of you, of how you manage all of the things that you're doing and the responsibilities that you have?
Yeah, I my life is by design. So I live in Sun Valley, Idaho, which is a ski resort, and I moved here. I grew up here, and I moved back 4 years ago, just as the pandemic was setting in, from Portland, Oregon, where I'd been for almost 20 years. And my husband and I moved here because our love is in the mountains and being outside. And we spent so many years driving to the mountains or traveling to the mountains. And now we live in the mountains. I mean, an hour ago, I was on the Nordic ski trail with my daughter and her friend and another friend. And we were out in this beautiful, white, snowy world. If you follow me on Instagram, which is the Clean and Green Living podcast, you'll see a lot of ski content. I talk about that being my favorite kind of clean and green. So, you know, you have trees and white snow and fresh air. That is like the number one most important thing anyone can do for their health. I mean, I have a master's degree in physiology. I'm a big advocate for getting outside and moving your body, breathing fresh air. I mean, if you have that luxury, again, if you live in the city, your air may not be as fresh as mine, but just getting outside, connecting with nature, that costs nothing. And that is so valuable to your health because, you know, most air is cleaner than what we're breathing inside, or even think about in your car. This is a conversation I've had a lot lately. You know, who's looking at the plastics and the off-gassing of our cars? It's kind of everywhere.
It really is. You have encouraged me, but also I've been trying to actively get outside more. And again, I am in New York City, so how fresh is my air out here? But it's definitely just like a stress reliever too, of being able to get out and just empty out my brain. And just, thank goodness, I mean, it's Manhattan where I live, so it is in itself an island, but I live maybe 15 minute walk from the waterside. And just by sitting there and parking myself on a bench and just, I don't know, listening to the birds go by, it's a whole different environment. Or there's tons of green spaces where I live. I mean, hello, Central Park is not that far away from me either. Or the biggest green space that we have here. But just getting out, like you said, connecting with the outdoors, moving away from the screens that we have in front of us and allowing ourselves to just, you know, look up and out. That's such a wonderful place to be. So thank you for encouraging us all to do that. So Reagan, with, I guess, you know, as we're starting to wind down our conversation, what do you see the future for yourself and for what you're advocating for? What do you hope for? What do you hope happens?
Yeah, so I'm hoping that in May, I will be going back to DC for the second time. In 2022, I went with Beauty Counter as the top brand advocate from the state of Idaho. They take the top person from every state plus some additional women. And we go to Capitol Hill and we hold congressional meetings. So this last time we held, I think, 62 meetings in the course of one day. And we meet with our senators and representatives and their staff, and we help to educate them about this issue. And then most importantly, we help to urge them to support the health protective legislation that is, you know, coming into that legislative season. So back in 2022, that was MOCRA. So we were there in April, and then MOCRA passed in at the end of that year. So that was a really big win. I don't think it was a coincidence. When you get Beauty Counter is primarily a company of women, and I think we're over 40,000 brand advocates in the US and Canada. When you get a lot of women together, we get things done. And so, you know, there are a lot of texts being sent and a lot of letters being written. And we heard that from the staff and from the congressman. Like, we understand this is an issue. We're hearing from your constituents. And I like to remind people that that really matters. You may think that your call or your letter to your congressman doesn't matter, but it does. They pay attention. And if they get 5, 6 of them, that's can be as powerful as getting 20. So never feel afraid to reach out to your legislatures and tell them about what you support. So I'm hoping to be going back to DC in May. We're just about to finish the earning period for this trip, and I'm hoping to earn that honor again. And one of the things that we will be presenting to them is actually a ban of PFAS from all cosmetics. New Zealand just passed a ban of all PFAS from cosmetics. And so that's one of the things on the docket. There's also the Safer Beauty Package, and all of these things are just steps towards addressing ingredient safety, pre-market screening of ingredients, transparency, labeling. You know, it's a lot of nitty gritty things that some of them are even over my head, but one step at a time. And we've made a lot of progress at the state level. So if you live in the state of California, Washington, Oregon, there actually been a lot of state bills passed. And those are good drivers for federal rules in a way, in that they're, and I'm hopefully I'll use this term correctly, preemptive. So if California passed, they actually banned formaldehyde from products in California. L'Oreal is not going to formulate their products just for California with formaldehyde and then make them without formaldehyde for the rest, or with it for the rest of the country. So states like California, Oregon, and Washington are really helping to drive those decisions and those mandates for companies. Same thing with like the Safer Salon bill. So that's a positive step, but you know, like I said, we've raised the floor, but the ceiling is still like really high, and there's a lot of work to be done. And that's where I feel like the work that I do educating people in my community, in the podcast, in my Instagram, is really the important part. Because, you know, like I said, 1% of people know about this issue, and 99% of people are impacted by it. So if our conversation today influences one person, I feel like it's a win.
It is absolutely a win. And this really speaks to what you were just saying before too, and what I try to tell people as well. Don't think that your voice doesn't matter. Even if it feels somewhat frustrating, even if things get knocked down, but you're still out there and you're saying, I do not agree, or I want things to be different. You sign the petitions, you write your representatives, know who your representatives are. That's step number one also. And listen to people who are out there speaking on behalf of the constituents of whatever, the city, the community, the state, and the rest of the nation, because that's really powerful that one group of people could potentially offset something or start something up, and then the rest of the states follow suit. So, I mean, right, we're in an election year, but also there's elections going on all the time anyway when it comes to different representatives for different things. So I think just, and I'm not a political, like I don't know all of the laws and things, but I do know who's voting for what, and to look at people's websites and look at what they stand for and how they voted on other things, and write letters to stuff. And, you know, even small things, if you feel like, wow, that's really cool, we got a community garden out of this, or we got some discrimination laws out of this, like it feels like a win. And that would hopefully encourage people to continue that fight. So thank you for encouraging all of us to advocate for what we believe in. Reagan, is there anything that we haven't discussed or that I did not ask you in this conversation that you would like to share with our listeners?
Focus locally. I mean, what you can do in your own community is such a big piece of your daily health and happiness. You know, finding a composting program, or, you know, taking your reusable bags to your grocery store instead of plastic, whatever it can be. I think it makes a big difference when it is local. And then I encourage you to also pay attention to what's happening at your state level. I'll use the example because it happened just 2 days ago. I was notified by an organization called Non-Toxic Neighborhoods. They're a great nonprofit that's working to get glyphosate and other pesticides banned from parks and recreational spaces, because banning pesticides from agriculture is a really big lift, but we're being exposed to this in other places. And they were trying to pass a bill in the Idaho state legislature that would give immunity to pesticide manufacturers from having any legal recourse taken against them for physical harm if the product was approved by the FDA. So we know glyphosate causes cancer. It is an FDA approved product. So if they pass that in the state of Idaho, that would prevent any farmer, any community member from going after Bayer Crop Sciences for damages. I think earlier this week, they just had like a $300 million settlement. But fortunately, I sent a letter, an email to, you know, someone sent me the form. I was able to click on it and it said, send to every senator and representative in the state of Idaho. They all got my email saying vote no on S1245 and the bill was killed. In Iowa, that same bill just passed the Senate. Their state's on it. So, you know, it is really important. I heard back from our congressman saying, no, they're concerned about this. They're concerned about how that impacts Idaho's agriculture. What if people don't want to buy our products anymore because of these pesticides? Like, they're thinking of it from a bigger standpoint. So, you know, I felt good. I'm like, okay, I did my job by saying your constituents care about this. So I really highly encourage you to pay attention at that state level, because there are a lot of bills being passed, like I said, in Oregon, Washington, Idaho, that are helping to drive federal legislation. So if you know what's going on in your community, in your state, that's going to have a really big impact.
I am not familiar with what a lot of the stuff that you do. I mean, I am a woman. I do use personal care products, but there are certain things that I look for and I've learned a little bit about, but this really has me diving a little bit deeper about that. So for me too, I'm going to be starting small with chipping away at how I can also make a difference for myself, my surroundings, my environment. So Reagan, my two-part question, I should say, is what is on your plate today? This is a pun intended two-parter, figuratively speaking. We're wrapping up. It's a little bit later in the afternoon here on a Saturday. So what is one of the things that you're going to be working on next? And then what is your next meal going to be?
What am I working on next? Well, I am preparing for a podcast episode with a woman named Ashley Posner, who is the founder of a company called State of Change. And they are formulating perfume, like, you know, the kind we wear, the parfum, without synthetic chemicals. So all natural fragrance, which is really exciting. She actually comes from the fragrance industry, conventional fragrance. And so I'm really excited to talk with her about that shift, about that mindset shift from her, from being in a, you know, the traditional industry to being, you know, counter to what they're doing. So that's going to be a great conversation that's happening soon. So I'm getting ready for that.
And what is on your plate today as far as your next meal? Because this is technically a food discussion in a way. Whenever I speak with my guests, I always like to get some insights as to what your flavor preferences are and what kind of meals you're making for yourselves.
Well, for anyone listening, I'm actually not making meals for myself because my husband is the cook in our family, which I know it's a huge privilege. I actually made a list when I was in my early 20s of all the things I was looking for in a man. And one of them was that he was a really good cook. And a girlfriend of mine said, you know, you kind of have a lot of things on that list. And so I think I took the cooking piece off, and I kid you not, I met my husband like 2 weeks later. And I was like, see, I didn't have to take that off the list. But we're primarily plant-based family and we are endurance athletes. And so I just skied about 20 kilometers today. So there will probably be a lot of vegetables. We tend to eat a lot of red pepper and leeks and fennel and lacinato kale, some beans, cannellini beans, black beans, pinto beans, all garbanzo beans. There might be some tofu or tempeh, and then usually some sort of whole grain like quinoa, rice, maybe some avocado. Maybe tonight will be rice and bean bowls. That's one of our favorites, with vegetables and some bichon sauce, which is one of my most favorite. If you haven't had bichon sauce, it's fantastic. Highly recommend it.
My mouth is watering as you're speaking because it's been a few hours and I'm about ready to get to my next meal. So you are inspiring me. That sounds very hearty and delicious and flavorful. Like that sounds so good. Reagan, thank you so much for being on with me. It was such a pleasure getting to know you and also for you to bring in some insight into a topic I don't think has ever been discussed on this podcast with 7, 8 seasons now that we're in this. So I really appreciate all of your experience, your expertise. I really do wish the best in what you're pursuing and also the fact that a lot of us can now support you as well.
Well, thank you, Dina. This has been really fantastic, and I'm grateful for the connection. And social media has its downsides, but I also really appreciate how it can bring people together who have shared interests and passions, and also just how it can open us up to new information that we never heard about before.
Thank you so much for joining me this week on the Dish with Dina podcast. I am Dina D'Alessandro, registered dietitian, nutritionist, founder, and chief executive life changer at Dish with Dina, and I'm also your host. If you like what you heard, I would be so grateful if you could subscribe to this podcast, leave a review, and share this with others who you think might benefit from what we have to offer on these episodes. You can also join my mailing list at dishwithdina.com or email me at info@dishwithdina.com with questions, comments, feedback, and if you'd like to be a guest on a future episode, because everybody eats and we all have a story to share. I hope you tune back in next week when we dish again.